The controversies continue to pile up for Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Scott Pruitt. Earlier this week, the Washington Post reported on a $100,000 trip Pruitt took to Morocco, arranged by a lobbyist. Months later, the Moroccan government hired that same lobbyist, according to the New York Times. And for weeks, Pruitt's faced a host of other ethical questions on excessive spending, housing arrangements, and raises for political appointees. Last week, he told Congress that those allegations were nothing more than an attempt to discredit him. We're going to put the scandals aside for a moment and talk about what Pruitt has been doing when it comes to policy at the EPA. We're joined by Juliette Eilperin, who covers the EPA for The Washington Post. Juliette, welcome. And he's actually gotten a lot accomplished when it comes to the Trump agenda. Is the EPA a totally different agency than it was, or do you think it's still evolving?
I would say it's probably still evolving, partially because many of the regulatory rollbacks that the administrator has put in motion are still underway. Many of them are either not yet finalized, subject to court challenge and things like that. And also, we've had such upheaval in terms of staffing, folks leaving the agency. It's just in a bit of a state of flux is the way I
would. Well, let's talk about that issue. The Trump administration has, across the board, had a lot of positions that have been unfilled, and that is certainly the case with the EPA. What's been the effect of that on the agency?
We've had hundreds of EPA staffers retire, take buyouts, leave in different forms since Mr. Pruitt's taken office. Over 700 individuals have left, and that's, frankly, we haven't updated the figures in a few months. So when you consider that the entire agency is roughly 15,000 or was before Trump took office, it definitely is shrinking. And in fact, Mr. Pruitt himself likes to tout the fact that they're down to Reagan-era levels and did so in a private Oval Office meeting with the president earlier in April.
And in some cases, I read that when a position goes unfilled for a number of days, eventually Scott Pruitt, the head of the agency, has to take over the role of that position, has to make the decisions that that person would be making.
Right. What you're referring to is the fact that there's something called the Vacancies Act. It's a legislation that the idea of it was that when there isn't a Senate-confirmed head of a major department, then yes, after a couple hundred days, if no one's in that place, then what happens is someone can't act as acting anymore, and you have to put someone else in their place or, again, kind of elevate a lot of those decisions. So that's what's happened in some cases, although they are beginning to put many permanent folks in, you know, at the helm of key policy offices.
So let's talk about some of the policy, starting with the Clean Air Act. This is something that's been in place since the 60s. What has Pruitt been doing on the Clean Air Act?
Well, he's undertaken a number of different changes on that front, you know, whether you're talking about, for example, moving to revoke what the Obama administration called the Clean Power Plan. It was put in, you know, imposing limits on greenhouse gas emissions from existing as well as new power plants. He's changing the way fuel efficiency standards are set, which, again, also is comes under that law. We've seen in terms of in kind of a wonkier subject that there are different air pollutants which would always have their emissions monitored. Mm. He has issued a directive which essentially allows utilities to testify to the fact that they no longer meet the threshold for reporting, in some ways accepting, you know, the industry's testimony on that front. He included a similar measure, again, if there's an expansion of a power plant, that they would have to get a formal permit. And Mr. Pruitt has argued, including before Congress last week, that this would be a disincentive for utilities to expand and install modern technology. And as a result, again, the EPA has instituted a similar test where you're relying more on the utility in question to make that determination of whether it needs a formal air permit.
What about clean water? In December, the EPA announced it was seeking a 2-year delay in implementing the clean water rule. Where does that stand now?
Right. So the EPA is seeking to revoke what is called the clean water rule, as you referenced. This is a very sweeping measure under the Obama administration. It would affect roughly 60% of water bodies in the U.S., which tried to address what happens when, for example, whether it's a farmer or rancher ends up undertaking activities that would potentially affect water bodies, whether a developer drains wetlands, things like that. Essentially, there's been a fight that's gone on for more than two decades over how do you define what water bodies need protection and need federal oversight. Administrator Pruitt has changed this interpretation. He wants to go back to, again, essentially a Reagan-era definition of what should be affected. And so that is an area that's kind of one of these rules that the ordinary public doesn't know so much about, but it has huge implications for farmers, ranchers. It's an issue that, for example, the president himself cares about as a real estate developer. Mm. And so we're seeing it's subject already to litigation and will be a fiercely contested change.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Juliet Eilperin, who covers the EPA for The Washington Post. We're talking about what's been happening at the EPA under the leadership of Scott Pruitt. And Juliet, let me ask you about another issue that came up last week in the House Energy and Commerce Subcommittee hearing. Pruitt was asked about the EPA's move to stop regulations on dangerous solvents like those found in paint strippers. Here's Pruitt and Democratic Congressman Frank Pallone of New Jersey.
Again, Mr. Pruitt, your deregulatory agenda costs lives, real people with names, with brothers, with mothers. You have the power to finalize the ban of methylene chlorine now and prevent more deaths, but you haven't done it. Do you have anything to say to these families at this point?
Congressman, as I was trying to indicate earlier, there is a proposed ban in place that we took comment on that we are reviewing presently. Mm-hmm. There has been no decision this time.
Obviously, I have nothing to say to these families.
Tell us more about this issue of methylene chloride.
So this is a paint solvent that's used often to strip bathtubs. At least 56 people have died since 1980 due to exposure to methylene chloride, most of whom were engaged in stripping bathtubs. And in fact, Congressman Pallone, who we just listened to, he made a reference to the family of one of the men who had died doing this activity. Mm. So what's happened is, as you say, there's a proposed ban that's being considered. What Mr. Pruitt did is he put it on what you call kind of the long-term agenda, putting it off to an undetermined date. It usually means that, you know, this proposal will stay in limbo and not be acted on, you know, in the next few years.
It seems like he's doing that with a lot of things, though, isn't he? Just sort of delay, 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 and then we don't have to enforce at the moment.
Absolutely. And that is certainly the effective impact of such a move. Essentially, there no policy is enacted and the status quo stays in place. Now, again, Mr. Pruitt was repeatedly questioned by Democrats on this. And what he did say is no final decision has been reached and Democrats shouldn't leap to a conclusion. Mm. But you're absolutely right that this was expected to be immediate and, you know, near term action. And there's no indication that they're rushing to address it.
Another issue, he wants to take a number of Superfund sites off the list this year. These are highly contaminated sites that require cleanup. What's going on there?
Yes, this is a significant priority for the administrator, and it's something where we have seen more swift action compared to previous administrations. So, you know, you have these massive toxic sites around the country where, you know, affecting nearby residents. It's often very difficult to reach a conclusion. Sometimes you have the responsible parties who the federal government can hold accountable. Other times you have what you call legacy sites where, you know, the company that's done the pollution has gone bankrupt. It's very difficult to kind of figure out how to pay for it, in part because we used to have a tax on industry that would fund federal cleanups. That doesn't exist anymore. Mr. Pruitt has identified this as a top priority. He installed one of his closest friends, Albert Kelly, to head this program. There was a lot of skepticism when Mr. Kelly came in because he was a banker with no experience in this area. Mm. He actually has gotten really positive marks from both, you know, residents who live near these sites, industry, and career officials. However, just this week, Mr. Kelly, who has come under scrutiny amid all these scandals, announced that he is leaving. And so a program which had been revitalized in recent months now faces new questions.
So as Scott Pruitt looks forward to, I mean, it looks like, according to many reports, that he may have saved his job in those hearings last week, that he'll at least be there for a while. Mm-hmm. What's the biggest challenge ahead of him? Is it a state like California that's going to push back? Is it environmentalists? I mean, is anybody able to stand up to what he's doing at the EPA?
I think the biggest challenge he faces are the legal challenges to all of these rollbacks that he's triggered. When you talk about things like the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, some of these regulations and acts that date back to the 1970s, these laws are pretty stringent and, frankly, are tilted in favor of environmentalists. And on top of it, one of the things that, you know, we and others have looked at is the fact that so many of these initiatives have been orchestrated by political appointees with much less federal experience, that they've made certain errors or, you know, have rushed the process in a way that opens the door to litigation. So I think in terms of, you know, what are the biggest challenges he faces, it will be in the courtroom rather than elsewhere.
That's Juliette Eilperin, who covers national affairs, including the EPA, for The Washington Post. Juliette, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jeremy.